And then, sort of, part of that acknowledgement of wrestling as a show, in some ways, is sort of taken advantage of by WWE in the sense that now that they're the sole company, now that they pretty much own wrestling, they now also own wrestling history, mm-hmm. and they have the opportunity to rewrite wrestling history at their pleasure, and people will just pretty much believe it now. And since WWE owns all the wrestling tapes, they really do pretty much own at least the visual history of wrestling, not so much the stories, but they own the visual history, so they can tell us how it was when those of us who were around realized it wasn't that way. Mm-hmm. Talk about how the WWE pretty much owns the history of wrestling.
That's crazy. That's the kind of thing that if I ever were to write a sequel to this book, is something I would definitely focus on a little bit more, too. WWE really did something a few years ago that a few people realized the severity of it. I got on this kick, and I remember when I was researching the book, this first started happening, of doing DVDs about stars who didn't work there anymore. And they were creating the Ultimate Warrior DVD, which was a self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, which was, by and large, a slam piece on the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, and there were positive things, and WWE tried to say, well, we say nice things or whatever, but for the most part, for somebody who really, and I wasn't an Ultimate Warrior fan. I'm still not an Ultimate Warrior fan. Ultimate Warrior is not a likable person. He's got very extreme views on minorities and on sexuality in the country and things like that. And whatever side you're on in that debate, even people who might agree with his sentiments have to disagree with the way he expresses them, because he's very, really unpolitically correct to the point of trying to be offensive. So what they did was WWE created this DVD about the Warrior, and they badmouthed him. And everybody laughs because no one likes Ultimate Warrior. And everyone turns around, and ha, ha, ha. And, oh, look, they have Christian on the tape, doing his promos for him, and they're making fun of him and everything like that. And no one realized the precedent that was setting. And that was McMahon's way of saying, you can either come back with us and work on a DVD with us, or we're going to release a DVD anyway, and it won't be that good, or we'll just ignore you. And the second person to deal with that situation was Bret Hart. WWE had actually created a DVD called Screwed, the Bret Hart story. And it was being done at the time that they called Bret, and they said, look, we're going to do this DVD with or without you. You have a choice. We could either call it The Best There Is, The Best There Was, and The Best There Ever Will Be, and you can do your interviews and talk about how you feel, or we'll call it Screwed, the Bret Hart story, and focus the whole thing about the downfall of your career and, how you ended up being, broke and, not broke, but out of the business with a stroke.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Bret Hart's back on TV. And that's been WWE's way of doing business. They did it with Billy Graham, and that's mentioned in the book. Billy Graham, who had a lot of real things to say about Vince McMahon and problems that he had with the McMahon family, and steroids and things like that, that he went on Donahue and he went on a lot of talk shows and talked about it. And now he's at a point in his career where there is no alternative. He can't be in the WCW Hall of Fame because there is no WCW. He can't be in anybody else's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
His choice is to go to the McMahon Hall of Fame. And part of doing that involves going on WWE television, saying he lied about all of his allegations against Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon, just to make sure people knew that this was definitely a revenge thing, goes on there. And I'll never forget this because that was one of my first times really being introduced to the business outside of televised wrestling, was watching the Donahue Show in 1993. And Vince McMahon was on it and Billy Graham was on it. And Billy Graham said, Vince McMahon, knew about the steroids. He knew about the things that were going on. And Vince kind of sat there and didn't say anything. And now here we are, we're, 10, 12 years later, superstar Billy Graham is being inducted into WWE's Hall of Fame. He's on WWE's confidential TV show saying that he lied about what he had said on the Donahue Show. And then comes Vince McMahon, who says that it took all the strength in the world for him not to jump onto Billy Graham at the Donahue Show and beat him up for saying bad. And it's like, dude, really, why don't you just go on television and just, masturbate, for an hour if that's what you really want to do? Because that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to really just stroking his own ego for the sake of television. And it's so sad to see a lot of these people who really, they give their bodies and they give their soul to the industry. And even when they're done, they're not done, because they're not looked at as people. They're looked at as performers in the business. And you got to do what you got to do until the day it's all over. And right now, it's Vince's show. So if you want your legacy to continue, you got to play his game, or you're going to be forgotten.
Yeah. And like I pointed out, you have a lot of quotes and great stuff from the wrestlers, from various wrestlers. How many total do you say? I forget off the top
of my head.
On
the record, we had 11. Off the record, there's tons more. A lot of people, so you talked before about WWE having it sewn up, but it's funny, I heard from a lot of people, well, I don't want to be on the record because I don't want to piss them off. And these are people who you would never expect to say that. People who don't work for them, people who haven't worked for them in a long time, that I was shocked.
Yeah.
Because if I was doing this book 7 years ago, when there was a WCW and an ECW, they would have been lined up at my door to badmouth them. But it was hard. People who they fired outright. You know, I don't want to get on their bad side.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what are they doing for you? You're fired. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Yeah. So yeah, you have a lot of great quotes from wrestlers in the book, and like you said, you talked to a lot off the record. How did you come into contact with them? And you sort of already talked a little bit about what they were like, because it sounds like there were a lot of people who would say stuff. Whistleblowers, if you will. We have whistleblowers in the conspiracy world all over the place, and that's kind of like what they're like. These former wrestlers, former WWE wrestlers who want to talk off and on the record. Well, how'd you come into contact with these people in the first place? Because they sound mysterious. I don't know how I'd find Kamala.
You know? Well, it's a lot of it involved just trying to, you know, talking to people who talk to people, and someone knew somebody else. And I mean, even now, back then it was funny because I was still writing. When I first started writing the book, I was still writing for the original website I wrote for. And I wasn't the webmaster. I was a columnist there. So I really didn't have too much of a need to talk to too many people in the industry, you know. Like, I had some people that I was cool with, and I would get emails from them, but I never liked to report news. I still don't report news on my website. I'll talk to people. I'll get some ideas and work it into what I have to say, but I don't really go out of my way to find sources and things like that.
Yeah.
So I kind of dealt with a few that I had, and then from there, sort of reaching out and meeting new people and branching out from there. The funny thing about getting all these together was a lot of people came out of the woodwork to talk to me originally when we first started the book.
Yeah.
And then about a month before the book was going to be finished, ECW One Night Stand, the first one, started.
Mm-hmm.
And the McMahon started handing out temporary contracts to lots of people. And suddenly, a lot of these people, and one in particular, I'm not going to say who it is, but he had gone out of his way to want to be in my book. He had come over to me, and I was at a show, actually out here on Long Island, and he came over and put his arm around me and goes, "When are we going to do your book?" And I was like, I'm thinking, I don't really want you in my book, but whatever, and we'll see what we can do. So the guy called me a few times. He talked back and forth. You know, he was going to be in it. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. And then, all of a sudden, his friends started getting the temporary WWE contracts, and he wasn't answering his phone anymore.
Yeah.
So I finally got him on the phone one day, and he pretended like he didn't even remember who I was. I said, "You know who I am."
Oh, man.
Be in the book. Oh, can you call me back later? I said, "Yeah, whatever." And I just didn't call back. And it's like that. It's funny because WWE still has that power, even over people who aren't a part of their company and haven't been for a while, just because they know in the business that they're in. They know where their bread is buttered. But one of the guys who's actually in the book who I have a ton of respect for, Elix Skipper, is one of the guys speaks on the record from TNA.
Yeah.
And Elix doesn't hold back. Elix just really, he has his opinions and he lets it go. And after we had done the interview for the book, I told him, I said, you know, I really appreciate that you did this. And I told him some stories about some of the people who tried to watch what they said and people who didn't want to be involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said to me, he goes, "I learned a long time ago." He's like, "So you can't really censor yourself." He's like, "If you don't work there, so you got to let it all hang out." He's like, "And then, you know, people will respect your opinions." You can't really, WWE sees through that, you know, and they know it. And if they see that you're the type of person who's going to do that, they're going to take advantage of you when they do get you under contract.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the problem that they run into.
Yeah. And it's still that boys will be boys sort of attitude where they'll bend for the promoter and not the other way around.
Absolutely, totally.
So we're talking about all these problems in the wrestling industry. If you, obviously you can't, they're not going to name you new head of WWE, but
no?
If you, last I checked, I don't know, I haven't been online in an hour or so, so it could have broken. If so, congratulations. But if you had the power to change the wrestling business, what would you say, or pretty much what do you think that the areas that need to be changed are?
Well, I think they need to grow up. I think that's WWE's biggest problem, and I think it's the most obvious solution, and I don't know why they haven't figured it out yet. The 80s, they were huge with kids. You know, they had the cartoons, they had the kids stuff going on. Then they became stagnant. In the late 90s, they became popular with teens and young adults. And why? Because, well, their audience were those children, and they grew up and they become young adults and
yeah.
Teens, so you obviously change your booking and your stories to get them excited. And also, you got to look at what was popular at the time. In the 80s, the popular Mr. T was popular, and Cyndi Lauper, and all that bubblegum cheesiness.
Yeah.
And in the late 90s, it was Jerry Springer, and it was, you know, the New World Order, and kind of that badass type of mentality of wrestling. And mm-hmm. nowadays, the popular things are shows like 24 and Lost and The Sopranos and shows that involve following a story, following it to the end, and maybe people who definitely in the days gone by couldn't really follow a storyline that well have learned how to do that. You know, they've learned to watch television shows and follow things that are maybe subtle, a little more subtle than they're used to. And I think WWE needs to realize that, hey, you know, if we got all these kids in the 80s, we caught up with them in the 90s, let's catch up with them again in 2006 and provide a form of entertainment that isn't lowbrow and proud of being lowbrow. Maybe something that's a little more respectable, something that involves a little more intelligence to follow, characters that are relevant. That's another thing, too, man. Characters are just not relevant. I mean, I go throughout my day, and I guess maybe it's because I've always fallen wrestling, but I've always fallen like that. Like, and you run into people in different situations, whether it's at, you know, a job or something like that, and you think to yourself, that would be a great wrestling character. You know, you can get, like, the angry, you know, whatever. But things that really definitely relate to real life. WWE doesn't do that. A lot of their characters are cut right from that comic strip type of mentality. And, I mean, I have this with the Spirit Squad, which is a new group that is, I mean, it's popular enough. It's five guys. They play evil cheerleaders.
Yeah.
It's all right. I mean, people like it. I think that any success that it has is going to be done despite itself. I don't get it because I don't see how it's topical. I don't see how there's anything going on right now in the world that is relevant to evil cheerleaders. If they were evil Duke lacrosse players, you know what I mean? Like, if there's nothing that you could really look at and you could say, well, they got it from that, it's just like, well, where did that come from? And that, I think, is the problem with living in the bubble and not living in society and not living in a world outside of wrestling where you know what people are into and you know what people are watching on TV and you know what people are seeing. All you know is what you have. And if that's all you know, you can't provide anything new. And they haven't really provided anything new in a few years. And the difference between this in the late 90s, you had people who could come along and talk into Vince McMahon's ear and say to him, well, this is wrong, we should fix it. And he might actually do it. Nowadays, his family are the ones that you're going to have to convince him to go against, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I think we're kind of screwed until TNA, which I guess is the number two promotion, gets their act together and really starts to become second place.
And you touched on sort of a concept that's spread now throughout wrestling in the last, like, year or so, and that's the wrestling bubble. It seems to be almost like the culture of hating wrestling within WWE. There also seems to be a culture of like, an insulation. They seem pretty out of touch with what's going on in the world in general. Not, like, just the thing that just popped into my head when I was saying the question was the terrorist attack scenario that played out last summer that caught them a lot of flack. That's sort of the most extreme example, but there seems to be a culture of insulation within WWE that hurts them big time.
Well, it's funny because when you're saying that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking the exact angle.
Yeah.
That's actually a case of, I mentioned earlier about how wrestling fans like to debate things even when it's cut and dry. And with the terrorist angle, and this is what I loved about this because it proved that point, when Muhammad Hassan and Sean Daivari came out, and they were playing Arab Americans, and Hassan is Italian to boot, which is even funnier. They were coming out playing terrorists, and they were terrorist sympathizers or whatever, and all the wrestling fans are debating, oh, well, they're not really terrorists, and how can you say they're terrorists, and it's not like that, and blah, blah, blah. It was all this debate going back and forth, and to me it was so silly because it was like, if you watched the show and you couldn't figure out that they were terrorists, you know, and that was their gimmick, then I don't know what the hell you're doing. But then after the issue came up where they had the bombings in the London subway, and WWE chose to air a storyline, an angle that night on SmackDown that involved almost simulated beheadings of The Undertaker, courtesy of these two terrorists and their friends, the same day that the bombings happened. All of a sudden they got pulled from TV, and the real quote-unquote news channel started to pick up on it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the debate ended because the news channels came out and they said two terrorist characters in WWE, and then no one debated it anymore. They said, "Well, yeah, I guess." Well, it's like that's the kind of situation, and WWE thrives on that. They thrive on that debate amongst people because then they're allowed to get away with things that are so blatant in what they are, you know, and they don't get questioned on it. As far as knowing society, I think WWE fails to realize that. I mean, and it's always been said that no publicity is bad publicity, and even bad publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
and they tend to gravitate towards that mentality. But it's not really that true. I think that no publicity is bad publicity for a moment, and then it becomes bad publicity. You know, I mean, bad publicity will definitely get you curiosity views. And you'll have people tune in and say, I can't believe that I heard what WWE did. I got to see the show and see if that's true. Then they watch it once. But those people aren't going to tune in again.
Yeah.
You know, they're tuning in to see how bad you really are. They're not going to say, you know, I tuned in because they shocked me and insulted me, but the show is just so good. I have to keep watching. No one's going to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's their problem.
Yeah. And like you said, they gravitate towards the bad publicity. And sometimes it may help, but a stream of bad publicity does not help at all. And that seems to be, you know, they may get four bad things they do, and then one good thing that'll barely be mentioned, because it's like, dude, you've done so many bad things. Like, you should be visiting the troops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should be, you know, doing good things all the time. Look at all the awful things you're doing constantly.
But even that, I mean, it's kind of funny, because sometimes you have to even digest when they do the good things. Like, I mean, for example, and I didn't really say anything, again, when you review the shows, I always try to keep away from cutting down on things where I think their hearts might be in the good right place.
Yeah.
And, I mean, last night was Memorial Day. And they ran this clip dedicating the show to the men and women of the armed forces, which is a great sentiment. I know that the McMahons love to support the troops, and that's totally cool, and that's their thing. What was funny about it was that they played the video clip twice, at the beginning of the 9 o'clock hour and the beginning of the 10 o'clock hour. And did you ever see the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray?
Yeah.
All right. In the beginning of the movie, they're trying to sell the Christmas Carol special with John Houseman. And there's three commercials, and one of them is ridiculous, where it was like death on the road, and it was like supposed to like scare people, like you have to watch the Christmas Story, your life may depend on it.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the thing for the troops, and I'm watching the beginning, and I'm saying, well, this is nice, you know, they're like, oh, the men and women of our own, and then all of a sudden, you go to like burn down buildings, are like, but we tend to forget the value of our freedom. It's like, where's this coming from?
Yeah.
You know, like, what a downer out of it. And it was long, and it was twice played. And I think that even when doing things that are good, sometimes WWE, their personality as a whole of the company, the company's personality or the way they project themselves,
yeah,
is so heavy and so heavy-handed that it definitely cheapens a lot of the good things they do, because they beat you over the head with it, you know? Even before wrestling was the way it was, and I remember in the early 90s, Vince McMahon got an award for some humanitarian thing, and they did 20, oh, for Michael Landon, or I think it was Michael Landon. No, it wasn't Michael Landon. I'm not really sure. But it was the beginning of Raw. Half an hour was spent showing Vince McMahon getting the award, and it's like, that's a bit of overkill,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's WWE. They focus very heavily when they do goodwill and charity, that a lot of people who sometimes are looking for reasons to be haters or not be, you know, pro-WWE,
yeah,
it even turns them off, you know, and it's like, well, it's not really doing anyone any good if even your good work is being pushed so hard that people are getting turned off from that, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Where do you see the wrestling business going in the next, like, 5 or 10 years? Do you think we're headed toward another boom period for wrestling where it's going to get more mainstream acceptance? Obviously, right now, the number of wrestling on TV has actually grown considerably in the last couple of years, so it appears that there may be a boom period on the horizon, but what do you think the wrestling landscape is going to be like in the next few years?
I think it's always going to be a staple of our culture. I think wrestling is a genre of entertainment that's, you know, older than anything we got here. You know, I mean, it's been going on hundreds of years, and television was built on pro wrestling, so I always think there's always going to be wrestling on television. As far as a boom period, I think the business is going to have to evolve and find its identity. I think that by continuing to kind of run shows, and everybody's doing it, you know, every company's doing it. They're either running shows with no frills, like, you know, some of the smaller promotions run very generic, no frills companies, or they're all trying to do the late 90s WWE formula, which is so cookie cutter, man. It's there's one authority figure. There's people who are against the authority figure, there's people who are for the authority figure, and then there's people who don't count, and that's how the show is run, you know?
Yeah.
TNA does it, WWE does it. Somebody's going to have to break that mold. Somebody's going to have to find what people are looking for. Personally, and I don't know if the numbers back this up, so I don't want to say it either way, but barring a lot of what USC does, I think might be a good idea. I think USC has a way of promoting their fights where it becomes about the fighters, mm-hmm, and it becomes about honor, which I think if you want to get lost into that world of where two men are fighting each other, you have to focus on honor a little bit. It can't all be about voices in their head or you stole my hat or whatever the hell they fight about nowadays. There has to be a certain amount of I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, you can create all these scripts and these stories to help sell a match, but at the end of the day, two men fighting is about honor, and that's, that should be the utmost thing right there. No one wants to lose, because as a guy, you don't want to lose a match when your honor is at stake. And yeah. WWE, especially now, and a lot of the wrestling promotions don't really focus on that with their competitors. It's always about, you know, well, you hit me in the head with a guitar. And it's like, well, what about the fact that, you know, you're a wrestler, your job is to win matches, and you don't want someone to stop you from doing that. That should be what it's about. And I think they need to kind of get rid of all the flair and all the spectacle a little bit once in a while, and try to sell a match, no frills, and with a little bit more focus on the performers rather than the situation surrounding the performers.
Yeah. All right. Now, you talked a little bit about UFC. That seems to have become it's sort of filling a void here, and maybe the next big thing. In a lot of ways, it's a different genre altogether, but it is, in a lot of ways, another form of professional wrestling, almost going back to the very early days of professional wrestling. It's gone almost complete full circle, it seems. Talk a little bit about the Ultimate Fighting and how you think it's changed wrestling, and just in general, you like I said, you're a longtime fan, so you probably remember when UFC was first starting out, and now it's... I remember when it was first starting out. I can't believe how big it is now.
Absolutely. I still remember watching the first one at my friend's house. You know, back when it was, you had Gracie, you had Chemo, who was awesome back then, Shamrock, and Tank Abbott, who ended up in WCW being a fool, was an ass kicker in UFC. The thing with UFC, and if you want a perfect example of what separates the Ultimate Fighting Championship from WWE and professional wrestling, look at the reality shows that are attached to them. WWE had a show called Tough Enough, and I cover a lot of that in the book, where it was on MTV for a while, but one of the things with Tough Enough was it was about learning how to be a professional wrestler. And a lot of what they showed on television had nothing to do with training. It didn't really foster a respectability for the business.
Yeah.
It didn't really show anybody how tough it was. And these are kids that... I knew people who were in WWE at the time that the last Tough Enough was happening, and they would call me and say, you know, these kids are running through the parking lot and they're puking, you know, like they're going crazy. Really, they put them through hell. And then when you watch TV, WWE had them doing contests where they dressed in drag, or where they, you know, try to play capture the flag or something, or tug of war, or whatever the hell they did.
Yeah.
And it really, there was just no respect for it. It made the guys all seem like goofs. In the end, all people really had to go on was a popularity contest as to who won and who lost. There wasn't even any real competitions between them to determine who got eliminated. Ultimate Fighting Championship, if you were to watch The Ultimate Fighter, which is on Spike TV, which is probably one of my favorite shows right now, just because of the way it's structured, it fosters a respect for UFC. You end that show thinking, wow, this is a tough sport. These people really, really care about it, and they really want to do it. And I think that, in and of itself, speaks volumes for how UFC views itself and how WWE views itself. WWE has guys who want to become wrestlers and want to prove what they can do, and rather than show that to its audience, they show the audience these guys are goofballs, whereas UFC has the exact same thing, people who care about UFC and want to succeed at it, and they show their audience how much they care and how much they want to succeed at it. It's respect for what your company does, and it kind of all goes back to that with WWE. They don't have respect for what they do. They want to be something different. Ultimate Fighting Championship wants to be the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and there's never any doubt in anyone's mind about that, you know, how they portray themselves and how they portray their shows, and I think that's what really separates the two.
And do you think there's a crossover audience, and that they might be taking some of the old wrestling fans away, or the newer, or you know, grabbing in those young fans that would have liked wrestling back in the day before UFC came along? Now they're sort of more into UFC. I know they're stealing sort of the boxing demographic, but do you think they're leeching onto or sort of draining some of the pro wrestling fans too?
I think they could be. I think that a lot of the ways that they do their promoting is very similar to what's always worked in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the top feuds that I remember in the business, I mean, it always goes back to when I was younger and people say, well, you know, you're talking about WrestleMania 3, but I mean, WrestleMania 3 was highly successful, and it's kind of thing that so many people remembered. Hogan and Andre, I mean, that was based on honor. That was based on, you know, two former friends who, you know, have this issue with each other, Steamboat and Savage. You know, Ricky Steamboat had a ring bell, you know, shoved into his neck and had to be out of wrestling, and this guy injured him. And that's a lot of what UFC is doing now that WWE doesn't do anymore. You know, things are promoted in a way that fans, professional wrestling might be used to and might have missed from the days when they used to watch it on, you know, TBS or whatnot. A lot of the gritty kind of realism, because for the most part, you know, USC is real. So they're able to do that. They're able to promote in a way where their product is real. And before wrestling broke kayfabe or started telling secrets about itself, it used to promote the same way. Because back then, the idea was to convince people it was real, you know? And nowadays, because they admit that it's fake, WWE and a lot of the companies tend to forget that they should still be promoting it as if it was real. I mean, the idea at the end of the day isn't to fool people anymore. And it's not to fool you into thinking that the fight between, you know, Big Show and Kane is going to be a real fight. At the end of the day, the trick is for you guys to know that it's fake and for the company to still play it straight in a way that you can get lost in that moment and pretend it's real. You know, it's like watching, I said 24 before, but I mean, if you're going to watch 24 the whole time and keep thinking to yourself over and over again, well, it's Kiefer Sutherland, it's not really him, you know, it's Kiefer Sutherland, how bad would it be if the writers of 24 actually thought that too? Well, what's the point in selling Kiefer Sutherland? You know, they know he's Kiefer Sutherland. He was in, you know, A Stir of Echoes. They know who he is. You know, I mean, he wasn't even in Stir of Echoes, but
yeah, I can't even think of a Kiefer Sutherland.
I can't think of one either, man. At the end of the day, it's about really selling your product as legitimate, even when your audience doesn't know it. And if you're able to do that, you're able to create suspension of disbelief, which involves anytime you see a movie, any Superman movie, any comic book that you read, all involves suspension of disbelief, forgetting that what you're reading or what you're watching is fake and thinking that it's real and getting involved in that world. And UFC still promotes like that because it is real. And WWE and the wrestling companies need to remember that their product, when being written for an audience, should be portrayed as real.
Yeah. Like, sounds like they're having a hard time getting over that hump of real fake that always sort of hangs over the wrestling business.
Absolutely. It seems so silly to me, too, because if for a company that's so obsessed with trying to be different forms of entertainment, it's like, why can't they follow the same rules that other forms of entertainment follow? You know, you can have a scripted show, but you don't continuously reference the fact that it's scripted during the show, you know, and it was in the late 90s and things like that. It became kind of the big thing of wrestlers to walk out of character, and it was fun for a few weeks because it had never been done before, and it was surprising. They had a situation where a wrestler named Beaver Cleavage, who had the most ridiculous gimmick in the planet, walked out on an interview, and they were like, Chaz, what are you doing? Why are you leaving? And it was shocking, and he said, wow, I can't believe that guy just walked out on his character. That's pretty cool. But the problem is that it can't be done over and over again, and the reason why it was cool was because it hadn't been overdone. And then it just reached a point where writers and promoters forgot that their product was supposed to be portrayed as legitimate even when it wasn't.
Yeah. And what has been, have you heard any reaction from within the WWE to the wrestling, to your book? And outside WWE, you know, wrestlers who might have read it who aren't in WWE?
Well, I mean, it's funny, I actually heard a lot of feedback before the book even came out from WWE of a lot of the people that you would probably expect to not be happy with it weren't happy with it. One of the top executives at the company, I know that that person's assistant had a lot of interesting things to tell people about it before the book even came out, before anybody knew what it was. Yeah. So, but since it's come out, I've gotten actually a lot of positive feedback, and a lot of the things that I've heard from within WWE, a lot of people were happy with the, especially the section about John Laurinaitis, and some of the theories in there that were within the books. I mean, the feedback has just been tremendous, both, you know, within the industry and outside of it, too. I couldn't ask for a better reaction.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it a lot. It's a really cool book, and it's very digestible for a mainstream audience, which I think is great, because a lot of wrestling books sort of, you'd have a hard time loaning them to a friend who's not a wrestling fan, but I say this book, definitely, you could give it to somebody and be like, here, now you can kind of understand what I'm watching all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually one of the reasons I wanted to write it. When I first started writing about wrestling, none of my friends, I mean, I have one friend who watches wrestling, but other than that, most of my friends aren't into the business, don't really get it. You know, I mean, I say in the beginning of the book, they name five wrestlers, and then they realize that Rocky Balboa is not a wrestler, and then they know four wrestlers. And it gets so frustrating to tell. I still have friends that, you know, I'm like, I have a friend of mine who's all about the book. Talked to him about it all the time, and I was like, yeah, you know, I start explaining how, you know, well, didn't this happen, and the Vince McMahon did this, and then he turns to me, and he's like, so it's all fake, right? And I'm like, dude, where are you coming from? So when I wrote the book, I said, I got to write it in a way that these people who still don't know that wrestling is legitimately accepted as fake, and people who still don't understand the storylines and the real versus phony can kind of pick it up, and they can get through it. My goal here is to introduce the world outside the bubble to the world that exists within the bubble, and show them just because it's a lowbrow, I guess, form of entertainment, doesn't make the people within it any less deserving of strong careers, doesn't make people in it any less deserving of being treated with respect, and a lot of them aren't. And unfortunately, it's that stigma that the McMahons have helped create as far as people not loving the wrestling business that has allowed that to continue. And my goal here was just to kind of open up some new eyes to that.
That's great. Tell me about worldwrestlinginsanity.com, the website, also Radio Free Insanity, that, like I said earlier, that I help you out, put it online and stuff. Tell the audience here about your website and the radio show.
Absolutely. When I first started the website is worldwrestlinginsanity.com, and one of the things I wanted to do when I started the website was I didn't want to create a wrestling news website. And one of the reasons for that is I think that there's actually too many wrestling news websites.
Yeah.
I mean, right now we have three major ones, and at times it seems like less, you know, just because there really isn't enough news to continue to repost and repost and repost.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, you'll find, you know, somebody will get released, and then someone will have a headline, someone else will have a headline, 3 days later someone else has a headline, and someone has a little more news about it. So I didn't want to get involved in that. Plus, I also found that when dealing with a lot of the wrestlers and people like that, they tend to be less on guard if they know that I'm not going to report everything that they tell me, that they forget to tell me isn't off the record.
Yeah.
You know, and you run into that. I talked to somebody when I first began writing who had told me a story. It was so sad about being at a photo shoot, running into a wrestling reporter, and he just simply said, "How you doing?" And the guy had told him, you know, about something was bothering him, some body part or whatever, and he said the next thing he knew it was on the guy's website. And he said,
"Oh, man.
You know, like, that's not cool. You know, I just having a conversation." So we started WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. I wanted to create something that was kind of closer to an Access Hollywood of wrestling, where the wrestlers were more accessible to the readers. And because of that, we have Dr. Tom Pritchard, who's one of the columnists on the site. As I mentioned earlier, he was a big part of WWE for years. Even Dave Wills, the crying wrestling fan that was made, you know, such an impact with that video. He's on things like that I like to do. And we do the Radio Free Insanity that you have definitely, everybody out there, you know, Tim Banal definitely hooked it up so many times it wouldn't be a show if it wasn't for you, man. So, I mean, I appreciate that.
Don't worry about it.
But one of the things I wanted to do with that, too, was get guests consistently on the show and not interview them in a confrontational way. If I have an issue with what somebody said, and we actually had a situation, I think when Vince Russo was on, I called him out on something that I didn't agree with, but I don't do it in a way that, you know, that kind of comes off where I have to appear smart by calling them out on things. I wanted them to feel comfortable, and I wanted them to get their side of the story out. If I agree with that side of the story or not, I definitely let that be known during the show at some point. But, I mean, I don't have people on and then yell at them. I don't do that. So because of that, it's allowed us to have an eclectic group of guys, everyone from Jimmy Hart to Christian Cage to Samoa Joe. We have Christy Hemme on this week, who one of the coolest things was after the interview was over with Christy Hemme this week, the winner of the Raw Diva Search, she actually thanked me. She said, "That was a very nice interview." And I guess she's used to some crazy interviews, you know, where people ask her terrible, terrible things. So I like that. I love the wrestling business, and I think the people who are involved in it give a lot more than they get respect for. I think they give a lot more of their lives and their bodies and their, you know, and their family life to the fans, and they deserve respect for it. And that's what I try to do too on the site. So it's more of a lighthearted place to go. You're not gonna, you know, things aren't sugar coated, but at the same time, it's presented more in an entertaining manner that I think people can go to it. And even if you're getting first involved in professional wrestling, you don't have to feel overwhelmed, and you'll probably get the gist of it just by looking around.
Yeah, and it's a lot like BeenAllOfAmerica.com, where sort of we're very similar in a lot of ways. You cover wrestling, and I cover conspiracy theory, but a lot of our stuff is very similar, and we're sort of like the same way. And your radio show, obviously, I've listened to it a lot. I really enjoyed it. I've listened to some of these other fly-by-night shows, and they're okay, but a lot of times they're more about putting over the show and the two wacky co-hosts, and, you know, then they have some wacky other guy come in and stuff, and it's always like, I don't know, I don't like that.
there's a lot of that. I think that what happened was with wrestling journalism, a lot of people try to be like other people, and because of that, a lot of people, I think, lose who they are. One of the things I did when I first started writing, I tried to just be very different than anyone else, just be myself, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I had gone out there and tried to be like, you know, Dave Meltzer or somebody who wasn't me, it would have shined through. And I think you can kind of tell when you hear a show or you read somebody's work if they're trying to be more or less a character, be something other than they're not. And that hurts them, I think, in the long run.
Yeah. And what I like about the show, too, is it's a lot like my show in a way. I always tell people when I'm going to have them on the show, and then other people will ask about it. It's sort of like inside the actor's studio for conspiracy, and I think your show is a lot like that, too, for wrestling. It's you sort of get inside the head of the wrestler and without, you know, bringing them on to be like, why did you do that? You know,
yeah.
Which is cool, because, like, a lot of times, you know, it may be interesting to somebody who's listening with, like, boy, you're really torn into that guy, but it's not really fun sometimes being in a conversation like that.
Absolutely. Well, you know what, the other thing, too, is that I think, yeah, a lot of times people have wrestlers on and they're more interested about hearing backstage dirt. And my kind of thing is, like, if you want to hear backstage dirt, there's plenty of outlets for that.
Yeah.
If I have a guy like, you know, like Devon Dudley on or, you know, Samoa Joe, I'm more interested in knowing their philosophy on the business and knowing how, you know, in an industry where there's thousands of people competing for top spots, how did you get that top spot?
Exactly.
What kind of mentality do you have and what do you think about the philosophy of the business? What do you think works? What do you think doesn't? And I mean, that's a way of treating them with respect that I think a lot of people fail to do.
So you got the WorldWrestlingInsanity.com and the radio show is weekly, right?
Yep.
Weekly Fridays at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And from what I hear, World Wrestling Insanity, the book, is a rousing success. Everyone is, they're breaking open champagne bottles over at World Wrestling Insanity headquarters. So what is next for James Gutman? What's on the radar for you?
I don't know at this point. I mean, the success of this book has really taken me by surprise. I mean, I knew it was going to be different than most books. I wasn't prepared for it. We found out it's actually the highest-selling book that ECW Press has had for wrestling ever. I mean, they've been around for 25 years.
And they've put out tons of wrestling books. So
totally.
That's,
well, one of the cool
things, an accomplishment.
It's amazing. I couldn't believe it. He actually said that when I found out, he said it was actually close to being the top-selling book they've ever had overall. And
oh,
I was
wow.
Like, wow. I'm like, that's amazing. So I'm very happy about that. And right now I'm just trying to digest it a little bit and let it seep in. I've always wanted to write, whether it's about wrestling or whatever it happens to be about. I just enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing creative writing. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to be doing a lot more work and keeping my name out there. I'm not going to go away, whether it's wrestling or literary work at all. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of things on the horizon. What those things are, I'm not 100% on just yet.
Yeah, it's really early in the process. I'm
yeah,
sure.
But definitely there's going to be more. I plan on taking this as long as I can. I'm very excited about it.
Nice. And they can read a lot of your stuff at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, your columns there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like I said, the radio show is Fridays at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And the book, World Wrestling Insanity, it is about the decline and fall of a family empire. I highly recommend it for the longtime Banal of America audio listeners who are interested in getting inside the wrestling business, have a curiosity, want to find out a little bit more about it, don't want to be overwhelmed by the information. It's always overwhelming when you first get into something, but this book's great. You can pick it up and read it, and you're not going to be like, I didn't understand a thing. You know, you'll totally understand it, and you'll enjoy it a lot, and it's very very humorous at times and really made me laugh out loud several times, so it's a great book in that regard as well, and you should be very proud of yourself. As far as wrestling books go, a lot of them come and go, and you're like, but this one's pretty memorable and enjoyable. So you did a great job on the book, James.
I appreciate that, Tim. Thank you so much, man.
And thank you very much for being on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks, and thanks to everybody. Thanks to you know, your listeners out there. And if anybody out there gets a chance to do pick it up that hasn't followed wrestling, you know, drop me a line or go to our message board, because I'm very interested in the opinions on those who aren't the hardcore audience, and see what they think of the book too.
Awesome.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio. Big thanks to James Gutman. The book is World Wrestling Insanity. The website, worldwrestlinginsanity.com. Check it out. I hope you enjoyed this special edition of Banal of America Audio. If you are a new listener who found the show because you're a big wrestling fan and wanted to find out more information about James and the book, you know you want to come back for more conspiracy theory, UFO talk, Bigfoot talk, Spear of Destiny, what's that? Find out on Banal of America Audio. Big thanks also this week go out to Leslie, Chiron, and R. Lee of banalofamerica.com for your help and support with the audio series and the website. Check out banalofamerica.com, updated daily with esoteric tomfoolery as only we can. Weekly columns from Leslie and Chiron. Twice a month we hear from R. Lee. I've got tons of stuff going up there constantly, so check out banalofamerica.com. It's the place to be in the esoteric world. I want to give a shout out and a plug to Leslie's ghost photo contest going on right now. We're past the submit your photo stage, folks. We're at the voting stage. This is where you have to come into play. This is where we all have a voice. It's time to vote for the winner of the ghost photo contest. You're going to want to go to ghostphotocontest.blogspot.com, find out information on how to vote, check out the pictures, decide on your favorite, vote for a winner, First place gets Ghost Hunters Season 1 DVD Collection and Ghost Hunters Key Ring. Second place, Sci-Fi Channel T-shirt and Ghost Hunters Key Ring. Third place, Sci-Fi Channel T-shirt. Those are the prizes. It's up to us now to decide who will get the prizes. Ghostphotocontest.blogspot.com. This contest being brought to you by Ghost Hunters the TV series, Sci-Fi Channel the cable channel, Debris Field the blog. You know the Debris Field. It's from BOA's Leslie. She does fantastic work. Check it out, ghostphotocontest.blogspot.com, and vote for a winner. Next week on Banal of America Audio, we have Royce Myers, creator and editor of UFOWatchdog.com, one of the most controversial, beloved, and infamous UFO websites out there. We're talking to Royce about the evolution of the esoteric on the internet, hoaxsters, where they come from, why they're doing it. We're talking about the Jonathan Reed hoax case. We're talking about the alien autopsy film case. We're talking about the infamous Sean David Morton lawsuit against UFO Watchdog. We're going to get Royce Myers' take on this lawsuit, how it happened, and his thoughts on it. Plus tons more, how he reconciles the often repeated mantra, there's no money to be made in ufology, with what he perceives to be a lot of folks trying to make some money in ufology through nefarious means. He's going to talk about that next week on Banal of America Audio. 6-10-6, be there or be square. If you're a longtime Banal of America Audio listener and you want to help out the audio series, there's a PayPal button at the audio archive and at banalofamerica.com, the index. Click on that, make a donation if you can afford to, if you have the money and you want to help us out. It costs money to put on a show like this. Phone bills, bandwidth, and just time. Just a lot of time goes into a show like this. So if you can afford it and you want to help us out, click the PayPal button. Make a donation. We would hugely appreciate it. As I said, Royce Myers next week on Banal of America Audio. We should have two more episodes after that, and then we're calling it a season, folks. That's the big news. We're heading down to our final three. Royce Myers is three. We got two more after that. And then that will be the end of Season 1 of Banal of America Audio. We're taking the summer off. We're already hard at work on Season 2. We'll get more into Season 2 as the weeks and months go by. Royce Myers next week. Another guest the week after. And then the season finale in 3 weeks. Be there, be square at banalofamerica.com. Until next week, folks, this is Tim Banal signing off.